You're listening to Your World Today on Radio Islam International. We continue with our segment focusing on Muslim communities. And Mawlana Yusuf Bimat, the guest for this segment, joins me on the line. Mawlana, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Muftisham.
How are you on this Friday afternoon, Mawlana?
Alhamdulillah, doing very well, alhamdulillah.
One of the most fascinating places in the world is undoubtedly Turkey. And this afternoon we speak about the Turkey's Black Sea. Mawlana, you may commence.
Jazakallah khairan, Muftisham. Yes, dear listeners, inshallah ta'ala, today we will be focusing, as we have been focusing on Asia, today we'll be focusing on the Black Sea coast of Turkey. Now, for those of us who are not familiar where this lies, just to put you into the picture, the sea is known as the Black Sea, and it's not completely enclosed as the Caspian Sea, not far off, and it actually has a spout that pours out through the Straits of Marmara, which is the sea which divides the incredible city of Istanbul. The shores, or the waters of the Black Sea, reach the shores of many countries and therefore has very strict border controls. So if you're looking at the Black Sea, you have Turkey in the south, you have Georgia in the east, Russia just north of that, you have Crimea, which is in the north, and further north is Ukraine, and on the west you have Romania and Bulgaria. And this is the Black Sea, so now we know exactly where it is, and now we wonder where does the name the Black Sea stem from, or where does it come from? It was named and called the Black Sea because of it being known as a very inhospitable sea to the ancient Greeks. And I suppose in many of our minds it conjures up a picture of a very dark and rough sea, and which is the case during the storms. But for most of the time, the reality is actually very far from that. It has very calm, azure, turquoise waters, which gently lap onto the shores of the very peaceful towns that surround it, and making its shores a very highly sought-after holiday destination. So, this is the Black Sea, and from Turkey, the entire northern coast, northern border of Turkey, lies on the Black Sea. And the lands, and like the lands that surround its waters, historically, they've always been the rope used in a tug of war between aspiring empires and nations. So from the Crusades, about much before the Crusades as well, but from the Crusades particularly, right till today, the Black Sea has witnessed in the past tumultuous religious and political change. Until today, it still has its fair share of political upheavals. So the southern coast of the Black Sea, which is the north coast of Turkey, is one of the more less traveled coasts of Turkey, and is home to the ruins of many nations and represents a remarkable mixture of cultures and religions. Of recent, its geostrategic importance has once again come to the fore with the Crimean dispute between Russia and the NATO allies, and the tug of war continues for this region. Crimea, which is the center of the dispute, is a little peninsula in the north of the Black Sea which juts out from Ukraine. And interestingly for us Muslims, Crimea has a very significant Muslim minority, the Muslim Crimean Tatars. And there is a book written by Muhammad Harb, written about 2 decades ago, entitled Al-Uthmaniyun. He is a Syrian author, and he wrote the history of the Ottomans. And one of the chapters is dedicated to the Ma'asatu Muslimi Qaram, which is the tragedy of the Muslims of Crimea. And he describes in detail how this was a Muslim majority island or peninsula. It was Turkish ruled for quite a long time and had been a Muslim majority from the 13th to the 17th centuries, before falling to the Soviet Union. And in 1944, Joseph Stalin, of the Soviet leader, he had ordered all the Tatars to leave their homeland and to go and settle elsewhere. So he sent them to Uzbekistan and to other places in the Asian steppe. But coming back to the Black Sea coast of Turkey, today the Black Sea coast of Turkey is a world apart from the rest of the country. It has clusters of villages that speckle the narrow coastline, and this coastline is hemmed in by the sea on the one side and rolling mountains on the other. So it's really a beautiful place today and has been in the past as well. And there's a winding road that threads along its way along the coast. It's about 800 kilometers, the breadth of the coast, or the length. And it's one of the most scenic in the country. And there's lots of empty beaches and ancient fortifications and vibrant seaside towns that one would come across when traveling there. So let us start, inshallah, on the west with a little town in the west of the Black Sea coast. It's about 200 kilometers east of Constantinople, of Istanbul, and that's the town of Sinop. And Sinop was historically an outpost of the Eastern Roman Empire until the arrival of the Muslims in the year 835. So the first Muslims that came there came way back in 835. The Seljuk Turks had captured the city in 1081. They didn't hold on to it for too long, and because it was a very strategic port, all the empires were vying for this little town or little port of Sinop, and it has been a port for at least 1,000 years. And it was only in 1214, 150, approximately 150 years later, that the Seljuk Turks of Rum had successfully captured the city. And there was a leader by the name of Izzuddin, and he had permanently secured this important Black Sea port city of Sinop, and this allowed the Seljuks. The Seljuks were a Turkish tribe who had come from the Eurasian steppe that moved westwards. They were one of the very dominant Turkish dynasties that were ruling at the time. And they now, after capturing this port, they were able to develop maritime trade with China, with India, with Persia, and as well with the Crimean region and with the West as well. And because they had managed to secure the port of Antalya on the Mediterranean in the south, they now control the coast of both the Black Sea and the Mediterranean. So that was Izzuddin, and he had captured the city of Sinop. After 1265, with the fall of the Seljuks, Sinop became the home to two successive independent emirates, or dynasties, or beyliks, as they call them, which were small Turkish fiefdoms or kingdoms that were in the, that were operating independently. So they were the Pervani and the Jandarids, and these were two Turkish ruling elites that were ruling, and now they had control of Sinop. And it was a few years later, in 1461, that the Ottoman Sultan Muhammad or Mehmed II, he had overawed the ruler, and he had taken control of Sinop, and that came under the Ottoman Empire in 1461. In more recent history, in 1920, Sinop was described to be mainly populated by Greeks, and was known as the safest port between the Bosphorus in the east and the city of Batum in the west, which is in the present-day Georgia. So that's a little bit of history regarding the town of Sinop. And it is full of history today. There are a few sites that one can visit. The most beautiful architectural piece situated in this town is that of the Alauddin Masjid, which was built in the 13th century. It displays beautiful Seljuk architecture, and it was named after the Andawa, who was Sultan Alauddin. And he was an amazing ruler. He was actually the brother of Izzuddin, the one who had captured the city. But his brother had feared that he will stand up against him, and he imprisoned him. And he had been in prison for a number of years. And upon Izzuddin's death, he was released. And now he comes out, and he's a versatile leader, excellent calligrapher, athlete, draftsman, carpenter, wise administrator, strong military commander, and with him his armies knew nothing but success for 15 years, and he goes about incorporating the greater region of Anatolia, and all of this comes under the Seljuk Empire. And he was a person who encouraged our agriculture. He built sugar refineries. He developed many of the cities. He really loved architecture, and he built a number of masajid, of baths, of city walls, all around the empire, with the capital being Konya in Anatolia. So Konya was the capital of the Seljuk Empire. So this is the Alauddin Masjid, which is situated in Sinop. Another important site to visit is the Pervani Madrasa. It was a madrasa in the past. It was closed down under the proclamation of the Republic, by Kemal Ataturk, and today it just hosts a number of souvenir shops. There's also the fortress, which is worth visiting. There is the very famous Sinop prison, which many people go and visit. I think there was a few novels or movies which were based on this prison, and it's really one of the reasons why people visit Sinop, to go and visit this very famous prison. They also have the statue of the ancient Greek philosopher Diogenes, who was of Sinop as well. So that's something else one will visit in Sinop. There is a very beautiful area. It's situated on a small peninsula. It's green and lush with the beautiful Black Sea surrounding it. There's also a very pretty fjord. Fjord is a little narrow inlet of water which has steep sides or cliffs on either side, which is people go and visit in Norway. They have a very beautiful one in Hamsidos Bay, which is in just outside Sinop. The next town east of Sinop is Samsun. There are a number of smaller towns. This is a bigger city. Samsun was part of the Seljuk Empire in the past. It was also part of the Sultanate of Rum, which was the Seljuk Rum. The Seljuk Empire had been divided into two portions. One was the one that ruled Anatolia, which was known, and the northern parts, which were known as Sultanate of Rum, and there were those that were further east. So Samsun was part of the Seljuk Empire. It was part of the Sultanate of Rum. It was also part of the Empire of Trebizond, and it was also one of the Genoese colonies at some time. After the breakup of the Seljuk Empire into very small principalities or little beyliks in the late 13th century, another beylik had come to rule this one, a different one to Sinop. These were known as the Ispanderiads, and this was captured later on from them by the Ottoman Empire under the Sultan Bayezid, and it was lost again shortly thereafter, but it was permanently conquered in the year 1420. So since the year 1420, Samsun, this city, became part of the Ottoman Empire. It's a very lush region around it, and they produced mainly tobacco, which the British really used to enjoy. It was exported to Britain, and the British used to describe it as being very small but very aromatic leaves and commanding a very high price. And when the railway system was introduced later on, this tobacco trade boomed in the city of Samsun. It's a very important port, and has always been so. Cappadocia in the south, which was a very important city in the past, if one would travel north from Cappadocia, they'd come to Samsun. So from the entire Levant, Syria, Palestine, that region, all the goods traveling north would pass on this ancient route through Cappadocia to Samsun, and from this port it would move to wherever else it would need to, wherever else it was headed for in the world. In more modern history, Mustafa Kemal Ataturk, who established the Republic State of Turkey, he made this town or made this city very famous because he was actually, in actual fact, a governor or an inspector for the Ottoman Empire, but he decided to go on his own, and he disobeyed the command of why he was sent. So he was sent from Istanbul on a ship which became very famous thereafter, known as the SS Bandirma, on May the 16th, 1919. And he disobeyed, and himself and a few colleagues, they now declare the beginning of the Turkish national movement. And he sets foot at Samsun, and this is where he declares and starts his movement. So as a result of this, unfortunately, the Greek population who were in Samsun were subjected, because this is now a Turkish nationalist movement, they are subjected to looting, to massacre and deportation, and the rest is history. And the city is obviously hailed by the Kemalists, the supporters of Mustafa Kemal, as a very important city. And today, if one would go there, on the shores of the city, there's a huge life-size replica of the ship, the SS Bandirma, and they have life-size statues of Ataturk and his comrades walking onto shore which they have done there to commemorate the so-called independence war. So that's one thing that people go and see in Samsun. There is the Pazar Masjid, which is the oldest surviving masjid in Samsun, a masjid built by the Ilkhanate Mongols in the 13th century. So Samsun is a buzzing yet very pretty city. The center, the CBD, the central business district, or known in Turkish is the Şehir Merkezi, which is the town center, is very important. And just by the way, if a person has some basic Arabic and Urdu or possibly Persian background, they will be able to understand a number of Turkish words, like the word Şehir Merkezi is one of those. I coincidentally just did 1 or 2 days of an Ottoman Turkish course, and the Arabic and Persian, which is from Urdu, was very helpful, where you learn a number of the mufradat, a number of the words in Ottoman Turkish were derived from there and make it a lot easier to understand. In any case, Samsun is a very picturesque city as well. There are multicolored homes on the hillside facing the sea, like you'd see in the pictures of Italy, I suppose. For tourists, there's not too much, however. It's more of an industrial city, so even though it is pretty, it's more of an industrial city today, and there isn't that much to see. Further along the coast, if you're moving further east, you come to the little town of Giresun, which is, in actual fact, the hazelnut capital of Turkey. It's a charming little town. There's an old masjid in the center of the business district. It's surrounded by hazelnut shops, everything hazelnut, from the different pastes to the chocolates to the sweets to whatever else. It's surrounded by hazelnut groves all around, further off, not near the city. And it's also, coincidentally, the cherry capital of Turkey. And the Romans actually first tasted cherries when they came to this little town of Giresun, and they had taken them from there to Rome. Further east is the last major city on the east coast, and that is the city of Trabzon. And it's located on the historical Silk Route. And this became a melting pot of religions, of languages, of culture for many centuries. And it became the trade gateway to Persia in the south, and to the Caucasus region in the northeast. And there were a number of Venetian and Genoese merchants who used to come through here. The very famous traveler Marco Polo, he also visited the city, and he ended his overland journey at the city of Trabzon before returning home to Venice in Italy. This came under Seljuk rule right early in the year 1071. In 1071, there was a very major battle, which inshallah we'll hopefully speak about next week, the Battle of Manzikert, which is in present-day Armenia. And after that, the city of Trabzon came under Seljuk rule, and it was a flourishing city, a very busy port, lots of trade, and trade caravans used to end off here and export throughout the world from this port of Trabzon. It's also very famous because the Ottoman ruler, known as Suleiman the Magnificent, the son of Salim, he was born in the city of Trabzon in the year 1494. So it is a very important city in terms of history. It is a melting pot of different religions and ethnic groups. There are Greeks, Greeks that have been staying there for centuries. There are Turks, there's people from Central Asia, and Russians and people from other places as well. In the modern history, it was still an important port, but the decline came about when the Suez Canal was opened, when the people, especially from Persia, used to initially use this port for the export of all their goods. Now they went further south, and the Suez Canal opened up another avenue for them, and the city began to decline in terms of trade. The Empire of Georgia further east had wanted to include the city of Trabzon in the empire, but it was given to the Turks in the modern drawing up of the new borders. So today it forms part of Turkey. In terms of sites to see there today, it's really a very busy city for tourists. I was completely stunned to find the city thronging with tourists. And the tourists were all Saudi families, all spending the summer holidays there in the surrounds. And virtually every hotel had been booked out by the Saudi families who come here and go to not just Trabzon but to the surrounds as well. In terms of things to see there or sites to see, there is the Hagia Sophia Church, which was a masjid and converted to a museum today. There is the very famous Sumela Monastery, which is an architectural masterpiece. It's built onto the rock face of a cliff, and it clings to the rock face up the winding road to the entrance of this monastery, and it is really something which people do go and see. I didn't have time to go and see to have much sightseeing, but it's something people do go and see. And to the east of Trabzon lies a little town of Rize, which today is not a sleepy village as it was in the past, but a modern town with hotels and apartment blocks. The surrounding areas, conversely, have really beautiful nature. There's terraced tea plantations, which fade away into the stunning mountain ranges. So wherever you drive, you have the Black Sea, the beautiful waters of the Black Sea on your left, and on your right, you have the beautiful mountainous region of the Kajkar Mountains, where you see these beautiful terraced tea plantations all along the road. These Kajkar Mountains are to the east of Trabzon, as we said. They are really magnificent, lush, green, forested area. There used to be many quiet villages in the past, but they have become tourist getaways today. And one of these little villages, which has been converted into a tourist area, the village still lies in the one area, but there are a number of wooden hotels that have now sprung up, and that is the little village of Eider, with it's filled with wooden homes, pretty but a little bit too touristy. It's surrounded by beautiful waterfalls, tall mountains, green forests, and that carry on and on right south to Iran and Syria in the south. There's also a number of tea plantations here. There's a very powerful Hemsen River, which is really beautiful as well to witness. And you have the people's own traditional wooden homes, which are built into the mountains. There's a beautiful old masjid in the town center. And there was a young Imam Hassan, who was from Mardin, who spoke beautiful Arabic. And he is the Imam of that beautiful masjid in the little village of Eider. And from there, if one would travel further into the mountains, there are a number of other villages you would come across. The one which is really high up is known as Pokut, and it's really high up on steep gravel roads. It's about 2 hours up into the mountains, literally above the clouds, and there's traditional wooden homes which make this entire area, the less visited corner of Turkey, so much more exciting and so much more beautiful. So that was just an insight into a brief history into the Black Sea region of Turkey, into the history of how the Seljuks and Ottomans had taken over the region and how it came under Muslim control, and also a little insight into what these towns have to offer today in terms of Islamic historical sites and, I suppose, in terms of nature as well. And that brings us to the end of the program for today, Mufti Saab. And inshallah ta'ala, we will carry on next week.
Certainly fascinating, Mona, the insight on the small towns all along the coast, various towns with fascinating history. Jazakumullah khair for the insight, and we look forward to the edition next week, inshallah.
Jazakumullah khair, Muntazam.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
That was Mulana Yusuf Bemat that gave us insight onto the small towns on the Black Sea, giving us insight into various towns. We now go for our Juma lecture.